Hello there, this is Kevin Pascal and you're tuned into another episode of the Hinted Neuron Podcast. On today's episode, you hear me talk with Johnny Crowther. He's the CEO and founder of CopeNote. We talked about mental health and dealing with issues around mental health. This episode is also sponsored by CopeNote, a service that helps you build a better brain. They send you daily text messages to give you daily mental health support. If you have someone who has ever felt the loneliness, depression, and also anger issues, because let's face it, guys, most of us, we deal with depression, we deal with loneliness day by day, and we always feel there was someone in the world who sees us. So CopeNote is a service that sends you daily text messages at random times in a day to inspire, to encourage you, and to make you feel seen and not alone. If you use code HintedNeuron, that is HintedNeuron, at checkout, you get a 10% discount, and also $5 goes to Hinted Neuron as a way to support this podcast. If you love this podcast, please leave a review, 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Subscribe and share my episode with your friends. Also, if you have any questions, comments, or concerns, don't forget to reach out to me on Instagram or Twitter at Hinted Neuron. And now, here's my conversation with Johnny Crowther. I'm here with Johnny Crowther. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me, brother.
Yeah. So, I guess a good place to start in our conversation today would be because I was checking out your app and your website. I found it to be a really, really cool idea and, you know, something that I've not really seen at all in any other place. I just want you to highlight your thought process, you know, what ideas brought CopeNote to life and the whole company.
Well, basically, I grew up with a number of mental health conditions and I was in treatment for a while, but I was realizing that I had a few big issues with a lot of the resources that I was turning to. Like some would require me to schedule an appointment and I didn't always know what my schedule would look like. And then some things would require me to download an app. And then, apps use all of your personal information and data. They have access to all of that stuff. And then a lot of things, even if it was a great resource, if I didn't pick it up or use it that day, let's say I was busy or it was my birthday or I was out of town and I would forget, they weren't really helping me. So I wanted to build something that could actually reach out to people and initiate that. So not only was it addressing a lot of the issues I had with other resources, but it was addressing the issue in me of me being inconsistent when trying to get healthier.
Yeah, I think that was really interesting. I want you to, because you talked about your own bits of suffering with mental health. I want you to highlight, you know, your own story. Maybe I'll give you time. Just paint a little picture for us. Your own story growing up and dealing with these struggles.
Yeah. It's weird looking back. When I was growing up, I kind of figured that everybody kind of felt like me. I figured that everybody had the same struggles. And as I got older, I started realizing that maybe what I was dealing with was a little different from other kids, but I grew up in an abusive household. So pretty much out the gate, I had a skewed understanding of what normal behavior was. And I was experiencing a lot of self-harm. I was engaging in self-harm and disordered eating. And definitely, probably my most pronounced diagnoses were schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, and OCD. And there were a long list of others, but I remember thinking that it very slowly got to a point where I couldn't live my everyday life anymore. Like very simple tasks were extremely difficult, like making a sandwich or something, or brushing my teeth. It became so challenging to just engage in these daily tasks that it was really kind of a miserable existence. I know that sounds really harsh and tough, but I was miserable 24/7. So I'm very, very thankful that I'm not living that way anymore. And I'm very thankful for every single part of treatment that I engaged in, whether it was something that I appreciated at the time or something that I thought was annoying and pointless. I think overall, I'm very thankful to live the life that I live now, considering the way I grew up.
Yeah. What was the most darkest moments at the time? Like in your own experience, what really took a toll on you at that moment?
I don't know. It was definitely a really dark, like 20 something years, pretty much the whole time. But one thing does stick out. I remember I was talking to a girlfriend of mine at the time, and I dropped her off at her house and went to get out of the car, and she started crying. And I was totally confused as to why she was crying. And I was like, "What's wrong?" And she said, "Well, it's just scary to date someone when you don't know if they're still going to be alive the next day." And I think that was a moment that kind of woke me up and made me realize that my mental illness is affecting more people than just me. And it was definitely a shock to my system, because I always figured, you know, if I feel crappy, that's just on me. And if I want to hurt myself, that's just on me. And it, when I realized that it was also hurting the people that I loved and the pretty much the only people who I cared about and were supporting me, it really made me rethink whether or not I should prioritize mental health, and then to the extent that I would pursue recovery.
Yeah. When you start prioritizing mental health, what do you think made you see the light? I think what I'm trying to ask is, what was the first steps you took, the very beginning steps you took towards good recovery and good mental health?
I can't really take credit for the steps that I took. I feel like I was kind of shoved in a direction. I took some steps, but definitely looking back, I think therapy was the biggest step, because that was what I had the most resistance towards. I did not want to see a therapist. I did not want to see a counselor. I was so resistant to it. And actually, there was something really illuminating about being diagnosed formally and realizing, like, wait, I can go home and read about this stuff and learn about it. It's not just this imaginary stuff that's in my head. It's real science. It's real health, just like anything else. So my first steps were, I was kind of forced into therapy, but it really did help me. And I also started reading a lot just on Google, and I started taking psychology courses at school. But there's a lot of free resources out there online where you can just Google about mental health and search your specific conditions and just equip yourself. And I think the more that I learned, the less afraid I was to engage in treatment, because I knew that it would help me.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting, because I understand you are a psychology person, right?
I went to school for psychology. So I do want to clarify, I'm not a doctor or anything, but yeah. I do have a psychology degree from a university. Originally I wanted to be a clinician, but when I started doing peer support, I realized, you know, I don't want to stay in school for another 10 years. I want to start helping people ASAP.
Yeah. What do you think, because maybe in a psychology perspective, what do you think are some of the things about mental health and depression that people don't really know about, or maybe just people take for granted?
Well, a few things. One statistic that kind of really makes people's eyes go really wide and their jaws drop is depression is actually the leading cause of disability worldwide. A lot of people don't know that. And I think that's because the way we look at depression is we have this we do this with all corners of mental health, but we have this image in our mind where depression looks like, you know, you're not talking to anyone and you're wearing your sweatpants on your couch and you haven't gone to work in 3 days and you're eating a gallon of ice cream out of the container or something. We all have like some sort of image of what depression looks like. And the fact is, it almost never looks like that. There are people going to work every day who are experiencing symptoms of depression, and whether or not they're diagnosed, whether or not they're taking medication or anything like that, has nothing to do with whether or not they're experiencing symptoms. So I think in direct answer to your question, one of the things that people most commonly misunderstand is that only some types of people experience mental health related complications in general, because I don't care if you have a diagnosis or not. You've probably been depressed before. You've probably been anxious before. You might be right now. And I don't think anyone needs a doctor to sign a piece of paper that says that they have that diagnosis for people to start working on it. Like, I don't think you need anyone else's green light to start prioritizing your mental health. You can do that now, whether you have a formal diagnosis or not, and it will benefit.
Yeah. So I think that would be a good point to go back to the app, your app Cope Notes. And let's talk about what the app could do for, you know, people in general in society dealing with issues, or even if they are not just dealing with anything at all, you know, because I still feel like you don't have to be dealing with some kind of illness before you could just get positive random thoughts in a day. But let's talk about your app for a few minutes.
Yeah. Basically, Cope Notes uses daily text messages to improve mental and emotional health. So we have people who are living with diagnoses like me who are using it. We have people who have never been diagnosed with anything in their whole life who are using it. And we send text messages every day at random times. And these messages are written by peers with lived experience, and they are approved, reviewed and approved by a panel of mental health professionals. So whether we're sending a psychology fact or advice or encouragement, it's all of the content is perfectly designed to address all of these corners of the human psyche. So we're not addressing certain diagnoses or anything. We're addressing, you know, like I mentioned before, doubt and fatigue and stress and grief and all of these things that we feel on a daily basis. And the way I explain it to people is, you know, what a toothbrush and floss is for your dental health, Cope Notes is for your mental health. So for people right now who might say, you know, I don't live with a mental health diagnosis, so I don't need to use a mental health resource. And that's kind of like saying, my teeth are so white that I don't need to brush them. It doesn't really make sense. Like, you're supposed to do things every day to maintain your dental health. And it's the same is true for your brain. I genuinely believe that you should be doing at least one thing, if not more, every single day to make sure that you are building your brain to be stronger and healthier.
Yeah. I want to understand, though, because I think this partly related to the first question I asked. How did you go from, you know, someone who was diagnosed to someone who built an app that could start solving some issues around depression and those related illnesses?
So when I was first diagnosed, I spent the first year just railing against my diagnoses, acting like they didn't exist or fighting and resisting them. But then eventually, when I started coming to terms with them and started reading more, I thought, wow, I want to take psychology courses and I want to become a clinician to really help people. But when I was in college, actually at university, I threw a comedy festival with a bunch of my friends, and it was a benefit for a local comedian who had died by suicide. And all of the money that we raised went towards the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And that was the first time I had heard of them. So I heard them on stage accepting this big novelty check, and they were sharing about the power of peer support and public advocacy. And I was like, wait a second, I always thought I had to be a doctor to help people with their mental health. You're telling me that I could do something right now? And the woman who accepted the award, Rosemary, was like, yes, absolutely. Here's my email. So that was that was in 2011. And that's when I really started understanding the power of peer support and public advocacy. So over time, I drifted away from the idea that I needed to be a clinician and drifted towards the idea that I can do tons of things to help other people right now, and then just partner with clinicians instead of becoming one myself. So it was actually a very gradual change. But looking back, I'm so glad that I went the peer support route, because if I hadn't, I would still be in school. I wouldn't have time to do any advocacy at all.
You talk about peer support now, but I think this is sort of a personal question too. Because I still feel like much of what we go through much of depression and mental health issues, they kind of escalate due to loneliness. And, you know, this idea that nobody sees you in the world or that you are all alone. What is your own opinion on that? Because I still feel like loneliness plays a huge part in these issues. And you talked about peer support. What are your own thoughts on loneliness?
Yeah, I think that's the one, you know, peer support helped me in a lot of ways, but I think maybe the way that was most immediately noticeable, like it didn't take me a long time to process, was it addressed the loneliness in me. This idea that I was the only person who was experiencing this, or that there was something wrong with me, that I was screwed up. And then I would sit with a peer with lived experience. This is someone who has been through something similar to what I've been through, or someone who has a friend or family member who has experienced this. And all of a sudden, it went from me feeling like a crazy person to the other person saying, oh, me too. Absolutely. And instead of me sharing something and then like bracing for impact and expecting the other person to judge me, I would share something and they'd say, you know, the same thing happened to me. And here's my version of the story. And it was so eye-opening, because you read statistics like, almost half of all Americans will face mental illness at some point in their lifetime. And you read a statistic like that and you think, wow, that's one in two people, like every other person. But then if I walk into a grocery store, I don't think, wow, every other person in this grocery store is experiencing the same symptoms as me. Those are the facts. The problem is it's hard to take statistics and then apply them to reality. But peer support allows you to realize, like, wow, it's not just me. It's all the people in this room. It's all of their families. It's people in my family and my coworkers and my friends. And it really kind of changes your mentality from one of complete isolation, where you are like this one of a kind freak of nature, which is what I felt like, to feeling like you really are part of a community, and you're just feeling parts of the human experience.
Yeah. What do you think though? Because right now you're using Cope Notes to solve an important issue, and I still feel like this is technology being used to solve an issue. What do you think could be done, you know, more on the side of, you know, using technology to solve issues like this, in your own opinion?
You know, this might not be the answer you're looking for, but I think what I've seen in modern technology is that we've kind of lost the point of what we're trying to accomplish. So I know a lot of people who are running really amazing companies, and they're doing really technologically impressive things, but they are almost more focused on being like using cutting edge technology than they are actually serving people with it. And in my mind, it doesn't matter how complicated or fancy the technology is. It matters, you know, the type of impact that it's making. So I'm a big fan of leveraging technology in favor of health and to help people who might not have access to other types of care. But at the same time, a big reason why Cope Notes just sticks with text messages is because, like, why would you want to create, you know, a virtual reality mental health resource? Just for example, if like 99.9% of people in the world don't have access to a virtual reality system, like, it just doesn't make sense. So I definitely think using technology to address health concerns is crucial and important, but I think that we also need to balance that and make sure that we're keeping our like enterprising tech dreams in check, so that we're not accidentally compromising the end user because we want to be fancy and high tech.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And what are your own perspectives on social media too? Because I still feel like much of the divide and depression, and, you know, this idea that everybody has it better than you, I think people really get this much idea from social media. What are your own opinions on that?
I, You know, someone, when I was first starting to build Coke Notes, someone said, well, why don't you just make it a Facebook page, or why don't you just make it an Instagram page or something? And instead of running a business, you could just post something positive every day. And part of the reason that I said no was because that wouldn't be nearly as effective as what we're doing now. But that's besides the point. In answer to your question, one of the components of that decision to not do that was based in the idea that we don't want to encourage people to spend too much time on social media. So I use Facebook and Instagram personally, and I also use LinkedIn, and I do my very best to use it sparingly, to use it as a tool. And there's this movie documentary that came out recently called The Social Dilemma that I encourage everyone to check out if they haven't yet, but it's about social media and some of its negative effects. And I am not saying that people need to delete their social media, but I definitely think that people should rethink their relationship with it, because they made a really good point in that documentary. They said something along the lines of, a tool is something that you use for a purpose, like a hammer. You pick up the hammer to build a house or something, and then you put it down. Mm-hmm. The hammer doesn't tell you what to build or when to build it or anything. It's just a tool. And if we use social media as a tool, just like that, then we should be fine. But imagine if you carried that hammer everywhere and the hammer told you what to build and when to build things, all of a sudden it's not a tool. So I think that we just need to be very careful about how we use social media, because it can be a tremendous resource, an awesome tool, as long as we avoid the trap of comparing ourselves to everybody we see online.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I think I like your own perspective on this. But I saw your TED Talk, and while I was watching it, you gave some interesting points about just the basic neuroscience of depression and mental health issues. If you just want to highlight some of these things here, so you could, you know, just give us just the basic neuroscience about the brain and how it adapts to these things around depression and mental health issues.
Yeah. So the weird thing about the brain is that it likes patterns, and it always wants to save energy. So your brain is actually kind of lazy. I mean, your whole body is lazy, really. It's always trying to do things super efficiently so that you can save calories, you can save that energy for something else if you need it. So brain will always default to the easiest thought to think, the one that will require the least amount of work. Problem that creates is that your brain is always rewiring itself to make these thoughts easier to think. Whatever thought was easier to think yesterday, your brain is going to move some synapses around to make that thought even easier to think today, because it builds on momentum. So that's great in some cases if the thought that you're thinking every day is a positive one and it is bringing fruit to your life and it is a healthy coping strategy, but it can have an equally negative effect if the thought you think every day is, I'm not enough, or I don't look good, or I will never achieve what I want to achieve, or people don't like me. And these thoughts, a lot of them are automatic. They're not thoughts that we're trying to think. So really, Cope Notes was designed to interrupt those negative thought patterns that are playing in the back of our brain 24/7. And provide a catalyst for positive thought. And the goal there, you can't see my hands right now, but I'm using them to show you. But basically, just picture I'm holding up two fingers, and these are synapses in your brain. And the more often you think a thought, the closer they grow to each other. The less often you think it, the further apart they have a chance to grow. And Cope Notes wants to pry apart those synapses associated with negative thought by interrupting that thought pattern over and over again. And instead, we are providing a catalyst for positive thought so that those synapses can grow closer together over time. So your brain, you got to think about it. It's like, it's a living, breathing thing. Your brain is constantly changing itself, rewiring itself around the clock. But you do have a say in which thoughts are reinforced and which thoughts gain momentum. And that's really where I camp out.
Yeah, that was really interesting. And for
there's something I heard also in the talk, because I think that's a picture you also painted now about neurons that fire together, wire together. And I think you painted that picture very clearly now. And, but I've tried to, because while I was thinking about meditation and what you do with Cope Notes. And, you know, basically you are trying to help people. What do you think is the role of meditation in, you know, for people who are suffering with this kind of issues? Do you think meditation plays a big role, or is just something that might be a temporary fix and just doesn't really have much effect?
So I am going to be honest and choose not to speak out of turn, because I don't know a ton about meditation firsthand. I know that from what I understand, there's a fair amount of research out there that shows that meditation can be beneficial to people. It's not something that I employ. I've tried it in the past and it just wasn't a good fit for me. However, I know a lot of people who swear by it. So, I'm actually just going to sort of step aside and say, you know, if it works for you, that's awesome. If you haven't tried it, definitely give it a shot. But I can't really speak to its efficacy because that's not really my area of expertise.
Yeah, sure. Good. But what do you think, though? Because I think Cope Notes sends you a text once per day. And do you think that is also a temporary fix? Because, I mean, you have 24 hours in a day and a lot of things could happen in just a minute. Do you think I've tried to think about how it could play out. Like, what are some of the best reviews you've gotten? Because I'm trying to think how Cope Notes have been to people in society.
Yeah, one thing I'll say about the temporary fix idea, and you bring up a great point. It's kind of like saying, well, doing 20 push-ups today is just a temporary fix. And if you do 20 push-ups tomorrow, that's a temporary fix. But if you do 20 push-ups a day for 6 months, all of a sudden you're stronger. So it doesn't seem like such a temporary fix. And the biggest difference there is consistency. So if you do one thing one time, I think that's definitely, you know, it's the difference between, you know, meditating one time, to use your example of meditation. If you meditate one time, that might be a temporary fix. But if you establish a practice of meditation where you are consistently engaging in that, that's not a temporary fix. You're actually changing yourself, you're changing your brain, you're changing your mind and making yourself stronger and more resilient. So, I think, if you look at anything in a vacuum, it can definitely feel like a temporary fix. But if you do that quote temporary fix over the course of months or years, you change who you are for the better. So in terms of reviews, we've heard some amazing stories on our website. If someone is listening, you guys can go to copenotes.com, and right in the top of the main navigation, there's a button that says reviews, and you can hit that and read through some of these stories. But we've heard tremendous stories. We've heard people divorcing an abusive partner. We've heard of people checking into rehab. We've heard of people calling 911. Just moments before attempting to take their own life. Then all of these things that people have, the decisions that people have made, whether they're moving to a new country or starting a new job, or these huge life changes that people have made, even getting sober, we've seen that happen because of a single text message that was delivered. It was the right message at the right time. And we use artificial randomization to send these messages. So we never know who, you know, everyone has their own unique text sequence. So if you signed up today and a listener signed up today, you guys would receive different messages at different times on different days. It's totally unique. So the fact that these messages came in at the right time and said the right thing just shows that the brain's ability to interpret is really powerful.
Yeah. I find that really interesting, though, because who are the people you said who collect these messages and write them?
So all of the messages are written by peers with lived experience. So I've written a lot of them myself, but they're all written by people who have firsthand experience with loss or mental health concerns or grief or any of these things that we address in our messages. So they're all written by someone who actually understands, and they're writing a message that would have helped them in that scenario. It's not someone trying to imagine what it would be like to be anxious. It's people who have struggled with anxiety and found ways to deal with it. And the same is true across the board for all of our other content.
Yeah. Well, what do you think, though, is like one of the biggest moral dilemmas your country is facing right now? What's just this one big problem you think, you know, that is just affecting so much people right now in your own country?
If anyone knows anything about America, there's 100 different problems right now. But to stay on topic, I would say, to stay on topic and continue talking about mental health, I would say that there is a tremendous uptick in mental illness and suicide, unfortunately. So we're seeing really, really high rates of suicide. And a lot of people are disengaging in care. So instead of people, you know, starting to experience mental and emotional health strain this year and deciding to engage in treatment, we're seeing people actually, we're seeing those symptoms get worse, and then people recoil and pulling out of treatment. And also our system of mental health care is underfunded. It doesn't have a lot of money, and there aren't a lot of people working in the field. So some people might have to wait weeks or months to see a professional when they need help right now. So it definitely creates a challenge, because in light of everything that's going on politically and socially, we're also seeing people, unfortunately, struggle with very, very serious mental health conditions without receiving any type of care at all.
Yeah, what you said now is really interesting. And, you know, because me myself, I think about the human condition and how people get to suffer a lot due to these issues. And, you know, I've tried to think about it in so many ways and tried to see if I could, you know, just think about solutions. What do you do is one thing we could be doing as society, as people, to help alleviate these problems, if we ever want to start, you know, at even just a small scale.
I think the easiest thing to do might be the hardest thing to do. And that is talk about mental health with your friends and family members. Just like bring it up. If you see a friend who is maybe acting not like themselves, or they're not being as social, or you have friends and they're acting just the same as they always have, I still think there's value in bringing it up, because I think, you know, I have friends who I've known for 20 years and I've never talked about mental health with them. And that's not right. You know, you shouldn't have to be on a stage to talk about mental health. You shouldn't have to be on a podcast. Like, you should bring up, genuinely ask the people in your life, how are you feeling? And if they say fine or I'm feeling good, encourage them to elaborate and ask real questions and seek real answers. And when you get stressed or when you get depressed or anxious or whatever it is, you have to bring it up to people around you. You have to share, because without people feeling comfortable enough to talk about it, people are going to continue to suffer without the care they need because of the social stigma. So I would say eliminating stigma and alleviating that sort of social pressure we feel to be fine and normal by choosing to ask people how they feel and sharing whether you feel good or you don't feel good, just being more open about that can make a huge difference culturally. If each of us did that to just a couple people in our lives, the entire world would change overnight. I'm not exaggerating at all.
Yeah. And I think that was really interesting, you know, because as men, you know, we tend to suffer more from suicide rates and depression, and just due to social stigma of you know, just I think it's the stereotype of men being strong, being strong and someone who doesn't show weakness, but I don't know, I still feel like, because, you know, boys don't cry and all these things due to socialization. Maybe we could start in small ways, like what you just mentioned. But then I've tried to think about it, because social conditioning just does this thing whereby even though we are educated enough to want to talk about these problems, we still find ourselves, you know, conforming to just the normal rules that we grew up, just the normal patterns of behavior that we grew up in. Well, how do you think we could start to kill off these shells of enclosure that we've put on ourselves of not talking so much about these issues?
I am a firm believer in the idea that strength comes from doing what might feel difficult. And so interesting how we will say, you know, someone is strong if they just stay the course and they don't waver and they don't tell anybody how they feel and they keep a strong upper lip and they just power through it. But a lot of times it's actually more difficult to stop and tell somebody that you're struggling. And I heard this great example of someone paddling in, you know, let's say someone's kayaking. And if they're kayaking downstream and the stream is taking them somewhere they don't want to go, it's very easy to just keep paddling in the same direction. They see that they're about to fall off the waterfall, but they're paddling straight and everyone's like, wow, how fearless that person is paddling straight towards a waterfall. But the real hard thing to do, the thing that requires real strength, is turning that kayak around and trying to paddle upstream away from the waterfall. And that's what I feel that, you know, wearing your heart on your sleeve and sharing more about mental and emotional health, that's paddling upstream. It's choosing not to just allow the water to take you wherever it's going to take you. It's turning around and paddling against the current and using all of your strength to change where you end up. I genuinely think that there are people listening right now who think that they're being strong by keeping their mouth shut and bottling it up. But I just want to tell them that true strength is letting your significant other know, talking to your parents or your friends about what's going on. That's what actually requires the strength that will save you.
Yeah, I think you bring up really interesting points, and I just hope your listeners could pick up one or two things from here. What do you think, though? Because I know you must have thought about what we pass through as humans, what society entails, and just the human condition. But what do you think is the meaning of life?
It's a pretty deep question. This is going to be a very non-exhaustive answer, but to contribute. I think we were put on this planet to integrate and support each other and engage in community. So when I look at my life, I think, how can I bring a ton of value to a ton of people, as much value as possible to as many people as possible, and leave the world better than I found it?
Yeah, that's pretty short and simple. I just like to ask these questions just to, at the end of the show, just to get people's opinion about what they think is the meaning of life. I'll put you on the spotlight now for just 1 minute. You just talk about anything you want to say to my audience, what you want them to know, and just anything at all. So you can go now.
Yeah. One thing that I always like to point out whenever I do an interview is, you know, if you're listening to this right now and you think that I'm different from you somehow, you're wrong. We are very, very similar people. There's nothing particularly special about me. I was not chosen magically to recover from mental health conditions. I still live with the conditions that I was diagnosed with. I just manage them better. And it's not because I'm smarter than anybody. It's not because I'm stronger than anybody. It's just that I put time into it. And I think that anyone listening to this call is just as equipped, just as capable, just as smart and strong, if not more so than me. So anytime I speak, I always want to clarify, this isn't a Johnny Crowder story where he's the one who overcame. No, we are all made up of the same atoms. We are all capable of living a healthier life, and our lives will look different. But anyone listening can do exactly what I did, or 30, 40, 50 times better than I did. And I just don't want people listening to exclude themselves and think that they can't do it and only certain people can. That's just not true. I know that you can.
Where do people find Cope Notes? Where do people, if you want people to, you know, reach out to you for any kind of talks or advice, where do you think people could find you online?
Oh, if you don't listen to anything else that I say, you can just go to copenotes.com, copenotes.com. There's a contact form on there if you need to get in touch with me. And that's a really good way to, that's like a one-stop shop. There's the podcast link on there. We have some merchandise, obviously the subscriptions. And then if you want to find me on social media, on Instagram, I'm at Johnny Crowder Loves You. And, Cope Notes has social media. We're not super active, on social media. So if you need to get in touch with me directly, I strongly encourage you to just go to the Cope Notes website and fill out the contact form.
Yeah, that's super interesting. I want to thank you for giving your time today to have a chat about this topic. And I think it's a topic that everybody could really benefit from. So thanks for coming on the show, Johnny.
Appreciate you having me, brother.
Thank you for listening to the end. Also, don't forget to check out Cope Notes at copenotes.com. Use code HintedNeuron at checkout to get 10% off, and also $5 goes to HintedNeuron. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, don't forget to contact me on Instagram or Twitter at HintedNeuron. That's it for me this week, and until then, stay curious.